This story is a pretty amazing one, and what Erling Husvik, the local resident, went through in World War II and the battle that happened off Samar. Could you talk a little bit about that and what you've learned in telling that story and what that what place that has in history?
Sure. You know, when we look at the battle, it was a pivotal battle just simply because the Japanese probably would have been defeated anyways at some point, but had they pushed through and kept the invasion from occurring on Leyte Gulf, it could have set back the United States significantly. So you have these destroyers and destroyer escorts, you've got cruisers, you've got escort carriers that have been sunk in that battle. And I think just in that little area where, and I say little, they were about 30 miles offshore of Samar when they were sunk, probably about 1,200 sailors from these different ships, you know, just in that little battle group that were there. Some were rescued right away. Others like the USS Hull and the USS Johnston and the Samuel B. Roberts, they 3 days later. And I think the personal side of the story is pretty amazing when you start talking about a man like Erling Husvik or Paul Miranda or these other guys that we've interviewed. And yet in the big picture, they were one of thousands of guys just on that October 25th, somewhere in that two or three day window that were going through the same thing. And then when you step back even bigger and look at the whole World War II picture, these guys were one of 16 million men and women that served. And so sometimes those individual stories get lost, and that's what's, I think, neat about being able to do a story like this, is we can bring it right down and become very personal with six or seven guys. And in the process, you know, finding out about your grandpa on the USS Princeton that was sunk, and then the other people in the community. One guy told me yesterday his grandpa was on the St. Lowe, which was a carrier that the Hull was screening for, and St. Lowe was sunk. So it's interesting when you start connecting all these little pieces to the puzzle. And you know, 10 years ago, I don't think we would have been able to do a story like this just because of the connectivity of the world anymore with the internet. So,
and in reading that book, The Last Stand of the Tin Can Sailors, it really struck me that these really pretty small naval ships for the U.S. were taking on, they were kind of caught out in the middle against a very big Japanese fleet that caught them at that moment, and they really just, they went right at them, basically.
Yeah, the Imperial Navy was, I mean, the fleet that Kurita had put there was an amazing fleet. I mean, they were powerful. They had the largest, the Yamato, which is the largest battleship in the world at the time, bigger than the Bismarck. And these guys were bearing down on these tiny little tin can boats that are, you know, 300 feet long and have five-inch guns and 20 millimeters and 40 millimeters and some torpedoes. And these guys are, Yamato's firing, I think, 18 or 20-inch shells at them and bearing down, you know, 20 miles away. They're starting to fire because they've got them on radar, and our ships couldn't even see them. And yet we're able to at least throw up enough smoke screen and protect the role of those tin cans, the destroyers that were there and the destroyer escorts was huge, just because they were able to provide the smoke screen that kept the aircraft carriers in business long enough to get the planes in the air. Some of them were sunk, and then they were able to go and land, sometimes on land, sometimes on some of the other carriers, refuel, get back up in the air. And that confused the Japanese. They couldn't figure out why the planes were still there. They thought that Bull Halsey's group had moved back down into Samar, and that's why Kurita put his tail between his leg and ran and retreated, when in actuality, had he kept on pushing through, it would have been bad news for the American Navy right there, and bad news for MacArthur, who was on land trying to do the invasion at the time.
Now, you talked a little bit earlier, too, about the challenge of having to tell this story and getting it right. How have you done? How do you think? Have you risen to that?
Yeah, that's been challenging. You know, when you try to tell somebody's story, you inevitably have a time constraint. And so we started off with about 10 hours of interview. We got it down to about an hour and 47 minutes of the story, then started realizing that's a long time to sit and watch something. And so started picking out things that, you know, we left out a whole section about Pearl Harbor just because it's a common story. The World War II started there, and probably didn't need to retell that. There were some interesting things that happened there, and I've got that on tape, so if the kids want to see it, hopefully they will hear, if Paul Miranda comes, they'll hear his story about being at Pearl Harbor. But yeah, that's been challenging. You know, telling enough so that you get the story right and leaving out, there's just some, when you have six guys telling a story, a lot of times they tell the same thing. You try to maybe let three or four of them tell it together, but then there's also individual things like what it was like when they watched the ship sink. Each of them say it was sad, but they each tell it in their own way because they're all a different perspective of the ship. And that to me is, when you get the individual personal touch on that, I think is important because that it's their story.